capitalista que, en su intento de sobrevivir la crisis actual, usa al grupo supremacista blanco para intimidar a la clase obrera.
El sistema de imperialismo y de colonialismo está en una condición muy mala, muy grave, en crisis profunda, y también el Estado y los derechistas quieren reforzar sus métodos de intimidar o para crear miedo en la gente para proteger este sistema, y por eso ellos entienden a hacer una manifestación para dar miedo en nuestras corazones. Queremos que decir que no tenemos miedo y vamos a mostrar nuestra unidad.
Novick dice que la reunión de los nazis en la ciudad también explica un poco la forma en que los explotadores del trabajo mal pagado de los inmigrantes trabajan con los supremacistas blancos.
Podemos ver, por ejemplo, en toda la situación con migrantes, que hay una coalición más o menos entre las fuerzas represivas del Estado y las corporaciones que explotan a los migrantes, y también estos grupos derechistas que hacen sus propias patrullas contra los migrantes, y más o menos es como un mano dentro de un guante. Quieren usar los fascistas para reforzar su capacidad de explotar a los trabajadores e intimidarlos.
Para el educador Ron Goches, la concentración nazi en el sur de California es un mensaje que las otras fuerzas capitalistas quieren decir, pero que solo lo expresan a través de los extremistas.
Ellos representan abiertamente un sistema totalmente racista y violento. Lo que el gobierno actual no puede decir abiertamente, ellos sí lo dicen. Y vemos que ellos son parte de lo mismo, que es el imperialismo y el capitalismo. Y por eso nosotros tenemos que salir para decirles, no solo a ellos, para nuestra comunidad, que nosotros estamos aquí para luchar.
El editor de la revista antirracista agrega que la movilización de este sábado 17 de abril es también una forma de solidarizarse con otros grupos étnicos y nacionalidades que son frecuentemente seleccionados por los nazis para hostigamiento y represión.
Nuestro mensaje es, no solamente queremos decir no a los nazis, pero también queremos apoyar y defender derechos humanos y liberación para la gente negro, africano, mexicano, indígena, asiáticos, los lesbianas y homosexuales y todos la gente pobre y trabajadores. Tenemos un mensaje de solidaridad, también de resistencia a los nazis y las fuerzas de represión.
Novick dice que la manifestación anti-odio del sábado durará un promedio de 2 horas, tiempo suficiente para enviar un mensaje claro a los represores y explotadores del país. El pueblo no ha renunciado a su deseo de ser libre.
Tenemos la marcha y un piquete alrededor de la alcaldía. Vamos a empezar a las 10, ellos tienen su manifestación a las 12, mediodía. Entonces vamos a hacer para 2 horas o más un piquete para decir, nosotros aquí en Los Ángeles no queremos los nazis y no queremos violaciones de nuestros derechos humanos y queremos avanzar la causa de nuestra liberación.
Era Michael Novick, editor de la revista antirracista Turning the Tide y veterano activista comunitario en Los Ángeles. Yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Antes de despedirnos, les notificamos que continuaremos reportando sobre los presos políticos en Estados Unidos este viernes y la próxima semana. Queremos agradecer a la Radio del Sur y a Telesur de Venezuela, al diario La Jornada de México, al Foro Argentino de Radios Comunitarias, a la agencia Pulsar y a todos los medios que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Maybe Alfonso, Valery Velázquez y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
También pueden escuchar el Informativo Pacífica de lunes a viernes a partir de las 9 de la mañana en los archivos de kpfk.org.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, so we're going into Bathrop Spears' Broadside Show. And in the studio with me is special guest Cynthia Williams. On the line with me is that man among men, notorious activist and innocent bystander extraordinaire, Wes Modes. Hey, Wes.
Hey,
let's see, do we have you? We have to talk a little louder. We got bad equipment or I just got bad ears. I don't know.
Maybe both.
Probably.
I don't know about innocent, but possibly not guilty of the crimes
Of which you are accused, sort of like Becky Johnson tomorrow at her sinister sidewalk singing trial. But you are a man who's done a number of things in the community. You've been working with the free school. You've worked with the Sub Rosa Cafe. You've been pounding around on the trash orchestra for which you got trashed. And you're also, you know, you do all kinds of... What do you do? What is your true nature, Wes Modes?
I don't know about these questions.
Yes, well, we're trying to get down to the nitty-gritty here. We have somebody who knows nothing about you in the studio. She's a traveler from out of town. She herself was held in police custody, as you were, a year and a half ago, although she was held longer.
It doesn't take much, it turns out.
Yeah, I know that you were held for allegedly a drum crime because they accused you of interfering with an officer, battery on a cop, or, I don't know, trash orchestration when you should have been, I don't know, mining your P's and Q's around the drum circle issues of about a year and a half ago. But that the trash orchestra and the activities of others was successful in keeping the public space at parking lot number 4 available for the drum circle every Wednesday when the police... under the redoubtable Sergeant Harms, wanted to drive people away. Or am I wrong about that?
That's correct. It seems that the drum circle has continued. I'm neither here nor there about the drum circle itself, though I like the people who do it. But I'm not very much down with police trying to bully folks in town simply because they don't, they aren't...
Can you hear?
Well-heeled, you know... thick wallet holding farmers market denizens.
Yeah, I know that that out of that case, it was a year of legal struggle for you and for Jack Russ, who is a Food Not Bombs volunteer who was picked up for allegedly snipping the green wire mesh that got snipped, taken down every Wednesday when it was put up to try to discourage people from using the public spaces. And eventually that whole procedure was abandoned by the police because it looked so stupid and also was so futile. But you guys fought that case for a year in court, and I guess there's a report on indiebay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, for those who want to follow your case and the drum circle struggles, and also the thing we're going to be talking about today, which is a new assault on you based upon your so-called parade organizing activities.
Right. So you giving background is not merely just background. It's really current to this case. A couple of weeks ago, I got in the mail an infraction for, let's see, what is it, 10-something-something-something. Something, something.
Parading without a permit or parading more than 100
like
people or something.
What is it? For those who like doing research, 10.65.030A, that's a municipal code of Santa Cruz infraction, which would seem no big deal. That was conducting a non-commercial event without a permit. And while I understood immediately the absurdity of it, I didn't actually organize the parade this year. It was, as it has been for the last several years, self-organized. There were people who were outspoken supporters of it, but nobody has done anything so much as, you know, like, nobody has organized the event and planned for it other than just people's individual planning to be there and planning to take part in it. So beyond just recognizing the absurdity of it, I realized that I was... I seem to be the only person who had been targeted.
Now, this is an event that happens. That happened every New Year's since 2005,
correct.
And you did a particularly interesting research job in early 2006 when you learned that several people attending the organizing meeting of the 2005 parade were undercover police officers in violation of basic constitutional rights to freely organize to get political events going.
Right. So this is a the police infiltrated this community group, and it was right on the heels, you know, this is 2005, it's right on the heels of revelations that, you know, the Joint Terrorism Task Force had infiltrated a peace group in Fresno, and you may have seen that in one of Roger Moore's movies. And so there was some national news, you know, every week on Democracy Now, there was a new revelation about you know, this group being infiltrated by the FBI or whatever. So it was a pretty embarrassing thing for the Santa Cruz Police Department, and ended up making national news, and the ACLU got involved. And
but not the local ACLU, the Northern. Mike Rotkin's ACLU, which is on the board, somehow just didn't find its way over to that.
That's a different organization.
Yeah,
it stands for something. I haven't figured it out, but it's not, when they talk about civil liberties, they're not talking about civil liberties.
American Commercial License Union?
something like that. So this, for that, I feel like there was a lot of embarrassment from the city that, you know, we weren't making news for a change because we had condemned some foreign exploit or decided that, you know, don't ask, don't tell was dumb, or insisted that America get out of Iraq, or whatever national policy our city council happened to
belatedly weigh in on.
This was something that was truly local and was not real positive light. And so for 6 months this went on, and I was one of the people profiled, and I was also very active in insisting that it wasn't a good thing to spy on people because they're organizing community events. So it wasn't that much of a surprise when I, among many people who were outspoken about the awesomeness of the New Year or do-it-yourself New Year's parade, got a ticket alone.
Let me kind of go back to that 2006 exposure of the police department. I recall that at the time Mayor Rotkin was the reigning Führer in the city, as he is now. He seems to keep popping back up, kind of like the perennial bad centavo. And he and the city manager all agreed that the police department did a fine job when they assigned Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel to investigate whether the police department had engaged in any wrongdoing. Although Deputy Chief Vogel also had an interesting role in this whole matter, which, what was that?
So, first off, the city council said, really, this is not a problem. That was the first thing they said. Then when it became really clear to everybody involved that it was a serious problem, especially when there was a media storm about it, then they said, okay, well, it's a problem, so we're going to have the police investigate themselves, which is predictable, and that's usually what happens in municipalities all over the country. But in this case, the person they assigned to the job was the very person who had
assigned the undercover officers in the first place,
who was Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel.
Well, he would be the one who really closest to the scene and perhaps most qualified to investigate himself.
In fact, an argument like that was made, which was to really try to keep kind of cute and charming in small town. You know, it's like Maybury or something.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, it took that report. That report took months, and then it came out. And predictably, they cleared themselves of any wrongdoing.
It was okayed by Rotkin, the mayor, and the real mayor of the town, the city manager, Dick Wilson.
Yes, it was okayed all down the lines, and they didn't see any reason for anything else. And more media storm, and the city auditor. What is his name? Bob Aronson.
Who hadn't done a thing in 6 years or issued a public report, finally decided this was going a little too far. Right?
And so he looks into it, and his conclusion was that, in all likelihood, Santa Cruz City Police violated the civil rights of parade organizers. And
which point, of course, the mayor fired the police chief and granted you a $50,000 restitution.
It's $100,000.
Ah, yes, right.
Then I woke up, and
and there you were, back where you started.
Back where I started, yeah. So at that point, Mayor Rotkin says, well, of course we realize that this was a serious situation, and of course we're making, you know, every effort in post-haste to deal with this. And,
to change the guidelines governing the police department's surveillance of peaceful activities, which in fact resulted in very little change and allowed for the same kind of activity that initially prompted the whole concern, right?
Right, exactly. Now, we haven't really come across any strong evidence that the police have been... There's certainly been their usual creepy selves creeping around and watching people, but not in that same manner of being undercover and sneaking into community meetings. So But that was predictable, too. You know, you wait for something to blow off, and then in another 5 years, which will be 10 years from the incident, you know, then you'll have another event, and they'll realize it wasn't worded strongly enough. But nobody's at fault, and yes, we're going to change the policy, but, you know, that's the wheels of...
But there was a sinister event that occurred that same year when, unfortunately, last night, Santa Cruz, a traditional commercial event, which...
First night.
First night, thank you, Santa Cruz, which I guess they formed it in order to preempt spontaneous protest that happens on New Year's Eve where people gather downtown and go to the town clock and play music and have for years. They fence off. Now they fenced off the clock. They tried to set up booths, make money, sell tickets, and that one fell apart about the same time as you and other questionable people as disorganizers stepped into the arena.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like First Night was predictable when, when an institution, the city government, tries to instill people with inspiration and artistry, I guess it's going to have predictable results, that it was kind of uninspired and cost a hell of a lot of money. So
certain questionable malcontents suggested people do it on their own, and then to the dismay of officials everywhere, they did.
Yeah. And continue to. So
every New Year's.
That's your background for 5 years. And so the, you know, it has happened that over the last 5 years, I felt like I've possibly earned special police attention as I do my activist-y, organize-y things around town.
Well, you've been known to practice with the Trash Orchestra illegally in parking garages when there are no vehicles there in violation of Mayor Coonerty's parking garage paranoia law, which does not allow you to be there unless you're parking or retrieving a vehicle or walking directly through.
I mean, there's all sorts of things. Like, you know, if you're a person who's using public space, if you're a member of the public using public space in this town, and you happen to be sitting anywhere near one of the penguins or the trash compactors.
Or the new parking meters. Don't forget the Panhandler parking meters are now becoming traditional artworks for which you cannot sit within 14 feet of, nor spare change within 14 feet of, nor politically table or perform for money for donation within 10 feet of.
So then a few years later, when the drum circle was threatened, a band that I was part of decided to come out and support the drum circle and maybe make it a little bit more challenging for the police to roust all the people playing drums.
So, and you did.
And so we did. We did that for 2 or 3 weeks, and then at the end, on the third week, the police targeted a member of Food Not Bombs.
Let me go back a bit, though. But you, at the beginning of that year, this you're talking about September of 2008.
Some listeners, Robert, have already experienced this.
It's true, but some haven't. I mean, we met, and you know, in January of that year, you also showed up along with the Raging Grannies and other organizations, and successfully for 9 months, the police backed off, and you and Trash Orchestradas were able to go elsewhere and practice and do your thing. But then they again moved in September, and you returned, right?
Yeah, so we returned, and they targeted a member of Food Not Bombs, and then Trash Orchestra was registering our protestations about arresting innocent Food Not Bombers, and the police, at the order of Sergeant Harms, targeted me. So I was tackled by 3 officers, and I was just playing drums and or a drum, and they put me in a chokehold and tried to tackle me and batoned me seriously enough to where when I was taken to the county jail. They refused to admit me and insisted I go to Dominican first to get sutures for my leg.
You were one step ahead of Cynthia here, who got hair pulled out of her head, according to her account. But you didn't make it to Dominican, right?
No, not at all.
That was last week, so you got to work a little harder, Wes. You
know? Well, I mean, I understand that there's people being harassed, and I mean, I didn't get my arm broken either.
That's true, like Donna Dice.
Donna Dice. So
an elderly
woman in a vehicle. I always feel like, you know, if you walk away from a police encounter and you're still alive, even if you're somewhat broken, you're probably doing better than thousands of people of color all over the country. So, you know, unlike Oscar Grant.
But in Santa Cruz, you know, you are facing a specific problem because you agreed to a plea bargain on this year-long struggle to get the charges around the drumming next to a police officer in the midst of a fracas. It looked to me it was like it was created by the police because they insisted on targeting people who were engaging in innocent First Amendment-protected activity.
Right. So when they arrested me and took me into the patrol car, there was already paperwork waiting for me in the car. And they said, oh, we have something for you. And the city attorney had drawn up.
If you have any questions, feel free to ask.
Six infractions from the previous week, including standing in the planter, loitering in a parking lot, destroying city property, and so on. Things that I was not engaged in then either. So this was part of the 15-month trial, is attempting to get what's called discovery material or material that the prosecution has that works to try to defend the folks who are accused from these crimes they've been accused of.
And Sergeant Harms was less than forthcoming?
He was less than forthcoming, always friendly like usual, but definitely not producing any of the information that we were required by law to get.
Interesting, because we've sought discovery from Harms for how loudly can a musician, should a musician play in terms of being legal within the Santa Cruz city limits on Pacific Avenue, because that's what the issue in the trial with Becky Johnson tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I have to throw in that little ad there. Sorry, Wes.
In the end, all these things come down to the police would like full discretion to roust anybody who they consider to be, you know, not, I don't know, shopping or whatever.
So we need to use our inside voice outside now?
You have to use your inside voice outside. I think the law says that if it is judged to be grating or something, I forget what
it's unreasonably disturbing noises, which actually is a pretty high standard because they want you to be able to jackhammer downtown and not get a ticket, because that would, you know, still in a development of our community.
Well, that's actually accepted by that very statute.
Yeah, indeed.
City people are doing work downtown.
And actually, anybody who the statute exempts any activity that is necessary in connection with a lawful activity. So you would think that fairly loud singing, provided you're not breaking windows, even political singing, is not only exempted on First Amendment grounds, but exempted on the grounds of the actual wording of this statute. We'll find out tomorrow at 10 a.m. Come on down, Department 1 and 701 Ocean Street, and check the trial.
Becky's charges are not dissimilar from mine in the sense that they've applied a law in a pretty specious manner in order to try to cause some trouble for folks who they know are specifically
freedom fighters, perhaps?
What do you say? Activists, right?
Yes.
People who are actively trying to make change in this city. But in my case, the reason why it's even noteworthy at all is that with the plea deal I accepted on the previous case to try to get the man off my back.
Attacking the officer with the drum case?
The drum circle, yeah, the drum circle defense.
Mm-hmm.
The result is that the city or the district attorney is trying to use that infraction to say that I violated the terms of my plea deal and should be fully sentenced for the suspended sentence that I received as part of the plea deal.
Bob Lee, the district attorney's office.
You haven't seen that person. It's usually a lady named Wiley. I forget her first name. Kristen, maybe? Kristen Wiley? Who's sitting in Department 2. So it went from being kind of like this kind of bothersome infraction that I figured would probably be defeated in court to being this pretty serious matter that might result in jail time because I've supposedly violated the plea deal, which is kind of a little bit like probation.
So let me understand this. You are accused of being one of the key organizers, or a key organizer behind the New Year's permit, the New Year's Act event this year. You didn't get a permit, assuming you even did any organizing at all. And I was in the parade, I'll have to confess, and I didn't see you there. Maybe you were there and I didn't notice it. And, you know, it generally, I think there are some people who
did more to publicize the parade than you did, but they're a little bit miffed that you're getting all the attention here, Wes. And but anyway, they're using that minor infraction to say, oh, he's violating the command of the court that you follow all laws. This is the danger I've always pointed out to people who either take probation or these, you know, the plea bargains that can come apart if they decide you are not, you know, kissing the ass of the nearest police officer with sufficient force and passion. To forgive me for exaggerating the point.
Yeah, no, indeed.
Because you're a dangerous criminal, of course.
You're a dangerous criminal if you do not actively respect the authority of the state, of the city, in this case. So...
Well, could it be Sergeant Harms is a particular hard-on? Actually, I don't know if Harms is behind this. Sounds like the DA's office is behind this. Do you have any indication?
I don't actually have any indication. I really don't have a sense that the police in town are being particularly vindictive.
Right. But they don't like being banned from the Sub Rosa, which you are a key part, a cafe on Pacific Avenue.
They're not fond of, but they tend to be kind of direct people. So they're like, usually if I see them, they're usually willing to tell me that.
Uh-huh.
The infraction charges, both at the drum circle before the drum circle incident, the more serious incident, and this recent infraction, were all sworn out by the city attorney, Bob.
John Barisoni?
John Barisoni.
Oh, my favorite. He's also the guy who's going to be prosecuting Becky tomorrow, though he says he's not the prosecutor.
And I guess he takes his orders from the city manager, so... And the city council, supposedly.
Yeah, we tried to get him to change his opinion in city council on Tuesday when we actually appeared right before the closed session to encourage them to drop the case to no avail. But and that doesn't, it's neither here nor there for you. But are you on the agenda of the closed session of city council to you know, suggest that Barisoni mend his evil ways? Or?
Oh, no. I mean, 5 years ago, after I watched the... city council do their little song and dance in an attempt to first turn, I think a then city council member talked about the police spying on community groups as a tempest in a teacup. So, like, that was the attitude, and then later they said, you know, later you watch this turnaround, and then later you watch this kind of, like, Machiavellian, highly cynical process, and I, at that point I was like, I'm done with you, bunch of clowns.
Well, you didn't like the fact that they first okayed Deputy Chief Vogel's investigation of himself and then decided to essentially push for the same rules that produced this political surveillance in the first place?
I mean, yeah, but on the other hand, it's like, as I've heard Mike Brodkin say, and he's right, is that in that role, in those chairs, they're representing the city. It's not about their personal beliefs, if they have any. If you're a city council member, that's what you do.
What about the people?
Well, I guess...
Isn't the city... is the city a collection of people or buildings? What's that?
That's why I'm an anarchist. Because I believe that people don't need a city or federal government.
Well, maybe that's the reason that you are, you know, causing so much trouble in town, that they need to deal with your kind.
Indeed. I mean, I feel that's at least part of it. If people reject authority, I think that the authority wants to, like, kind of remind them.
I mean, just look at who all is on a city board. I mean, you don't have people from all different backgrounds. It's generally all pretty much the same kind of people. Probably all went to high school together. I mean, you know, you don't have too much diversity, so...
Well, you do have your token Latino. We have Tony Madrigal. He's on the city council. And I have to say that Tony does occasionally try to speak up on issues. He tried to hear Becky Johnson's case that John Barisoni should not be a prosecutor and going after street performers tomorrow for all kinds of reasons, not to mention the weakness of the particular case, but just the idea that laws downtown, you know, are designed to allow even curmudgeonly people who don't like music and don't like political activism to be able to have their say and ask the through the agency of a police department to say, can you keep it quieter? And when the people downtown say, yes, we'll be a little more quiet, that should be sufficient. But instead, what the police department is doing is they're telling people to move along. And people are who are sometime performers, sometime political activists, are willing to be quieter because that's what the law requires, but they're not willing to move along unless, of course, they pull out some other law. But that's not what was happening, and that's not what's happening in Becky's case. And in your case, you have a hearing in mid-May coming up?
Allegedly. I think it might get shifted around a little bit to accommodate a lawyer I'm working with. And so right now it is on calendar for May 14th. It may get moved to May 7th or May 13th. You can get updates if you choose at indiebay.org. Also, I'm being supported by Red Hill Legal Support, which is a local group that helps folks who are being charged for various crimes that are from the anti-authoritarian community. So that's, you can get more information about that or contribute to my legal fund, if you so choose, at redhillsupport.wordpress.com.
Redhillsupport.wordpress.com.
Right.
Has this group, you know, been supporting other folks in charge with crimes in Santa Cruz that we know of?
They were supportive of certain tree sitters, or maybe a bunch of tree sitters, who, when the tree sit was up at UCSC, they supported Jesse Foray, who was actually accused in Minneapolis. He's a local, though, who was accused of a felony at the RNC in
Republican National Convention.
The Republican National Convention a year ago in November.
And I think that also, that story is also on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz for those who want to check it out.
And they're also providing support for the ADA 4. The four people, three of them local Santa Cruz people, who were the first people charged for the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act simply for participating in demonstrations, what would normally be considered First Amendment speech.
But now are completely criminal acts, it sounds like.
Correct, yeah.
So are you having any large rallies on the street, perhaps in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz to organize, or perhaps one of the parking lots, or maybe in parking lot number 4? Are you? I know you've kept a kind of a low profile for the last year somewhat, and I wondered if that was because of this ongoing case that you finally got, you thought was resolved in the fall or in the winter, and now seems to be coming up to bite you again.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, that's the reason why, in the end, I accepted a plea deal. Because at the end, I was charged with two misdemeanors. The maximum sentence for a misdemeanor is like a year in jail, so that'd be like 2 years in jail and $200,000 in fines. Not likely to get all that, but at the same time, misdemeanors are pretty serious in general, especially when one of them is a battery on police officers.
Battery meaning assault with a drum?
No, assault is different. So there's some legal...
Well, touching with a drum.
Touching would be...
You're trying to force Sergeant Harms to play the drum. How could you?
So that case, the drum circle defense case, resulted in 15 months of work, more than a dozen court appearances, and thousands of hours of legal work.
And how much discovery actually came out of that? How much evidence did the police department actually provide you when you attempted to look at a history of discriminatory prosecution?
So beyond the initial reports that came out that were really just the police officer's statements about what happened, very little, if any, discovery was produced, even though there was a court order to grant the discovery. In the end, the police just said, oh, well, we didn't save that, or we don't keep that, or that's too hard to get.
Give an example of something you wanted to get that they refused to give you.
So a very typical example would be, here are all these officers who are now stationed at the drum circle. What is their mission? What do they do? How do they know to be there? Do officers just go out on the street each day and just pick spots they think where crimes might happen? Or do they get some kind of, like, you know, minutes? At the beginning, do they get some kind of briefing? Those briefing records exist, but they don't keep them. So that, you know, if a week goes by and you don't get a copy of those briefing orders, which I think are called general orders, I'm not really sure of the language, you will never get them because they're not kept. So, I mean, that's like a really typical thing where we're trying to figure out what the motives were behind officers, say, going after me or going after the drum circle or deciding to not persecute the drum circle after the events of, you know, a year ago September. What decision was made not to? How did they decide to, say, visit Sub Rosa, like, you know, which is the anarchist cafe down by Spruce Inn?
Which you were instrumental and others in in setting up.
So, well, I mean, it's to protect the people of Santa Cruz.
They visited that like a half dozen times after, you know, while the case was in progress, based, you know, with really specious excuses.
Did they visit it in order to purchase coffee and read the books?
If please come in, we ask them to please step out to the sidewalk.
You say, excuse me, sir, can you step to the sidewalk, please?
can you sit on the curb right here?
I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they said this public space, but we say, well, it's still private property, even if it is a public space. So. I mean, it's neither here nor there. We very seldom have run-ins with police in Sub Rosa, but we are trying to get some of that discovery. Like, what was behind that?
What about a sign that says... reserve the right to refuse service to anybody.
Well, you can't do that if it's a protected group. But I guess the police officers in this case are not a protected group unless they are, shall we say, there with a warrant or observing a crime in progress, right?
Right. So that's exactly what we would ask an officer. But, I mean, I was just trying to spell out some of the discovery that you...
Go ahead, please.
Oh, that's it. And those are my examples.
That's it. Well, we're talking, by the way, with Wes Modes, who is facing an early May appearance in court with the threat of a couple years in jail and how much in fines hanging over his head?
I think like $20,000 or $200,000.
$20,000 to $200,000. You better make up your mind on that one. Yeah.
It has to do with that's just sort of the maximum fine for misdemeanor.
Yeah. So you're going to be facing that if the DA is successful in persuading Judge Burdick.
Burdick, yeah, Department 2.
I didn't like the way he ruled in the Johnson case on Tuesday, I'll tell you, but who knows. It's interesting. People who get sleeping ban citations were often given similar kinds of, probation. Or they would say, we will give you, you'll plea bargain it away and it'll disappear in a year and so forth. But in the meantime, you have to obey all laws. But homeless people would say, well, we can't obey all laws because we're going to have to sleep outside. And they would say, well, those minor infractions don't count. Apparently, in your case, minor infractions do count. And I know that I'm Micah Posner of People Power, who led a King Street biking, the police called it a parade, he just called it a ride. He got a ticket, months after he rode through there, and he ignored it. It went to, they don't need to go to warrant now, they go to collection. But it's apparently being treated as a major crime in your case.
Yeah, I was made this, the same assurances were made to me that minor infractions would not be a big deal, that they, so it's a little bit unheard of. I don't think I've talked to a single lawyer who didn't raise a lot of questions about that. Typically, an infraction is not cause for questioning like a plea deal or probation.
Yeah, it's amazing. Santa Cruz has creates its own rules. I know in my case, where I went to the Metro Center in order to request that they turn off religious sermons being broadcast over the public microphones on taxpayer dollars, and after first threatening to arrest me, they agreed, and then later came back and did arrest me because they said I couldn't be talking to people there on the property when the security guard wanted me to leave. Because I'd also pulled out my tape recorder when he approached me and said, you know, what's your name, and so forth. And that was found to be, criminal behavior by the Santa Cruz Police Department, by the court of Ariadne Simons in Department 1. And when we tried to appeal this infraction, it wasn't even granted a hearing because the judge who got the appeal notice screwed up and sent it back to court improperly. When we pointed that out to him, he agreed, but he said it's too late because the remitter has been remitted. So it's interesting. They create, to some extent, Santa Cruz, is there, you should be happy to live in a unique community like Santa Cruz, which kind of creates its own rules. They're very anarchistic up there in the courts as well.
Or bipolar.
Or bipolar, right.
I mean, I think this is probably pretty typical of small towns. I don't know. I've only lived in one other small town. I lived in Bloomington, Indiana for a while. Don't remember dealing with police on this level. But it seems like in Santa Cruz, something about the liberal belief of the town must make the city administrators feel like it's they're the only things keeping us from the, you know, the chaos in the streets or something, keeping us safe from ourselves.
Yeah, well, the kind of riffraff that hangs out at the Sub Rosa Cafe and that frequents free school classes and can be found at the drum circle or even near the trash orchestra, I think is an object lesson to those of us who want to see you, shall we say, put safely behind bars where you belong.
Well, you might get your chance. So that's mid-May. Be on the lookout for it. Indie Bay is probably your best source of information. And see you in the meantime.
All right. Talking with Wes Modes. If you want to help Wes again, get in touch with him via, give us the website again.
Let's see. It was, I think I closed that window. redhillsupport.wordpress.com.
redhillsupport.wordpress.com. And Wes, thanks. Please keep those updates coming, and I'll try not to blow the whistle on you too soon next time.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Wes.
Thank you. Thank you all.
All right.
Thank you both for being there. Thanks.
Good luck. Keep us advised. And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the line to call in. Actually, probably should have mentioned it was open for the last 40 minutes, and people could call in and ask Wes questions, maybe. Who knows? You may still be listening, because you are listening to 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org here, sitting patiently and having said only, what, 43 words here in the studio, is Cynthia Kennedy. Cynthia, you actually gave me a long interview yesterday regarding, you know, your adventures with Officer Azua, I think his name is.
Yes, Officer Azua.
I actually know Officer Azua, but I want to make sure I've got the right officer there. And, you know, if you want, you can go through it again, or I'll be playing it down the road. But, you know, why don't you proceed as you wish? What would you like to discuss? What went down? I guess
Was it last Saturday night? It was this past Saturday night, and I was sitting by watching drums being played outside of a grocery store, and I was sitting against a building eating a burrito.
This is New Leaf Market area?
Yep. I was sitting outside eating a burrito.
On Pacific Avenue.
On Pacific, which we all know it's illegal to eat a burrito on Pacific.
Well, did you have a permit is the question.
I forgot to get it.
There you go.
I mean, negligence. Okay. And the officer came up, and he went and talked to the people playing the drums, and then he came and talked to my friend and I.
Now, were the drums being played very loudly, or...?
Obscenely loudly.
Really?
I mean, so disturbing that people weren't gathering to watch or anything.
And what time of day was this?
It was about 8:30 or so.
In the evening?
Yep.
And although I love the dry sarcasm and I use it all the time, let's pretend the people outside are as dumb as I sometimes feel I am.
There were a bunch of people, and there were only two street kids there.
So the people playing the drums were loud, not very loud, very, very loud.
They weren't very loud. I mean, right. they sounded like drums.
Right.
I mean, they sounded like a normal
level. Did they bother you?
No. I sat and watched them. I stopped for the purpose of watching the drums. I thought the music was beautiful.
And was the cop's purpose to drive the drum people away?
I'm not sure exactly what they said to them, but I'm sure it was something along the lines of we got a call or something, or you need to move along. And the cop told us that we couldn't sit there and that we needed to stand up. And I was like, okay. So I stood up and I put my...
Because you were sitting illegally within 14 feet of a building.
Yes, yes.
So you admit your crime.
Yes.
So perhaps what followed was just punishment. Anyway, but you did stand up.
Yes.
Okay,
I stood up and I moved away from the building. I took my dog and I walked away from the building.
You had a dog on the avenue.
The dog law has been repealed.
Well, it hasn't been repealed, but it's in the process of being repealed.
From what I heard, it was okay to have dogs on Pacific.
Well, the Downtown Association has said so, and what they say goes. Even though the law is otherwise still at the moment.
Yeah.
And I moved away, and I continued eating my burrito. They were still playing the drums, and the officer came back up to my friend and I and said that we needed to move along, and I asked him why.
Officer Azua.
Officer Azua. And at that time, he was the only officer there.
Were there other people there still?
Yep, there were still other people, people in business suits, people that looked like they were having a night out on the town. I mean, just, you know, regular
this
people having a regular night. Yes.
Saturday, April 10th, I guess.
Yep.
It
was. Mm-hmm. And the officer came up to us and asked us to move. I asked him what I was doing. I was like, I'm not breaking the law. I can stand here and eat. Like, if I was breaking the law, an officer has every right to tell me to move along or to leave. If I was being a disturbance, I wasn't saying anything. I was merely observing. I wasn't getting in his way or anything like that. And he told me that I needed to move along or he was going to have to see some ID. And I told him, again, I'm not breaking the law. And he was like, I need to see some ID. You're getting a ticket. And I was like, for what? And he laughed, and he was like, obstructing an officer. And I'm like, obstructing an officer? How am I obstructing you? You came up to me. I'm eating. Like, you know, I have nowhere else to go. I'm not allowed in the park after dark. I can't sleep at a certain time. Like, I'm not allowed to...
11 o'clock at night.
I'm not allowed to be on certain streets at certain times. Otherwise, I'm doing some criminal behavior, of course.
I don't know about that, but there are... severe restrictions on sitting, and the rear bank is closed at night.
Yeah.
And again, sleep or covering up with blankets after 11 o'clock is illegal.
So, I mean, where else would you expect me to go to eat? And the officer continued to get in my face, and I told him that I didn't have time for the consensual conversation, and I walked away. He followed me about a half a block, and... I've got about a half a block away, and he comes up, and he grabs my arm, my left arm, and, like, pulls me back around. One of my friends, actually a bunch of my friends, had seen Officer Azua pursue me. He told me that I needed to stop, show him ID, because I was getting a ticket. And I asked him again, what law did I break? What law did I honestly break? And he looked at me, he laughed, and he, like... He just completely ignored what I said. I again told him if there's nothing further, I'm going to continue with my night, and I left. I make it to Front Street right in front of the Trader Joe's by the bus stop, and Officer Azua pulls up in his squad car. He gets out. He grabs me by my right arm, which my dog was on, trying to put me in handcuffs, and said that I was resisting then because I didn't let go of my dog leash. Because I'm sure I'd get an off-the-leash charge if I dropped my dog leash. He then told my friend to take my pack and my dog and get back at least 10 feet from us. And at which point, about 4 to 5 other cop cars had pulled up.
In the same direction? Different directions?
Different directions.
All on Front Street?
All on Front Street.
Were they blocking the road at all?
They were blocking the road, and they were kind of making a barricade as, I would say kind of like an arena to stop people from seeing things.
The police officers or the cars?
The cars. And then once I was in handcuffs, he said that he was going to search me. And again, I asked him, what have I done? What am I being arrested for? And again, no response. He pushes me up against the car and, they request a female officer there. And I told him that I'd like to speak to a supervisor. And he ignored me. The female officer gets there, and they're going to start searching my pockets, and they slam me down onto the hood of the car. I wasn't resisting. I was just standing there, and out of nowhere, you know, the cuffs get pulled, and I landed on the cop car.
How hard was the slam?
Hard enough to make the metal dent in and make a popping sound.
Were you injured? Was this face first? Or?
It was more my chest area. I tried to stop my face. I mean, I could kind of see what they were trying to do. Like, they do from what I've seen, a lot of people that get roughed up by the cops, that's generally the move that they go for. they started checking my pockets, and they didn't notice that I had a side pouch on. As explained to me by a San Francisco cop, my side pouch was considered a locked compartment, and locked compartments, you need a search warrant to search. I informed the officers of that, and when I tried to move my pouch out of their way, again, I'm in handcuffs, with four officers around me, one female officer, about four male officers. The officer to my left, tall, I don't know his name, I don't have his badge number, I know people that do, I'm a little unprepared right now.
It's okay, go ahead.
But he looks at me and says that I'm resisting again, and he reaches over my head when my arm is in complete excess to him. He reaches over my head and grabs my dreads and tries to slam me to the ground. I realized that when he was pulling me to the ground, that the ram on the front of their car was about to collide with my face, so I tried to brace myself so I didn't end up, like, losing an eye on the ram. And they said that I was trying to kick the officer. And then I had seen, when he opened up his hand, one of my dreads fall to the ground.
So he pulled one of your dreads out?
Yep.
Maybe he needed a souvenir of some kind.
A token of my appreciation. And, like, I'm on the ground. The other cops, after he had said that I was trying to kick him, the other cops had then pinned my legs and my arms, which were still handcuffed.
Behind your back?
Behind my back. Mm-hmm. excuse me. And they go through my side pouch. I'm asking him what I'm doing wrong, like, what have I done wrong? They keep asking me my name. They keep interrupting me and trying to ask me my name, figure out, like, where I'm from. And I refuse to tell them anything because at that point I still had no idea what I had done wrong.
You questioned the authority of Officer Azua. I think that should be obvious to you now. Hope you've learned your lesson, Cynthia.
Yeah, it's dangerous. It really is. Don't question his authority. I got put in the back of his cop car, and when we got to the station, him and the officer who had grabbed my hair and pulled me were both talking about...
The officer who had pulled your hair out, you mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those two were talking about how much of a bitch I was being, excuse my language. I heard them talking when they were outside of the car. They were going through my stuff. They didn't really ask me anything. The sergeant came up to me, who I would assume would be their commanding officer.
Do you know his name?
I believe Sergeant Williams. I think that sounds like his name.
Not sure.
I wish I had that paper with me.
Now this is after you've been taken to jail.
I was still in the police car, at the jail.
So you were taken directly to the jail.
Yep. I was taken directly to the jail.
Mm-hmm. About what time was this?
I would say it's about 10 o'clock, somewhere around there, probably a little bit earlier, like 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
The sergeant asked me if I had any injuries. The cuffs had gotten so tight on me and yanked around so much that I got a huge blood vessel that ruptured on my right hand. And I've got, like, a huge bruise on my hand and numbness in my hand. My hair had been ripped out. My neck still hurts to this day. It hurt then.
Get to a doctor and get some kind of verification for your subsequent lawsuit.
Yes. I also asked, they asked me if I would like medical attention there, and I said yes, and I was denied. When the sergeant
at the jail, you were denied
jail.
Medical attention.
I was denied medical attention. He asked me if I wanted medical attention, and
police
then
officer
I was denied.
Did or a deputy did?
The police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And
the sergeant.
Yes, the sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
He then asked me if I would tell him my name, and again I refused. I was like, I still don't know what I've done wrong. What am I being charged with? and he just shut the door.
Of the squad car?
Of the squad car.
And you were still inside the car?
Yep.
How long were you held there?
I was in the squad car in the garage for about 15 minutes, and then they took me out to take pictures. They took pictures of my hands while they were still in cuffs. So the front part of my hand, which is bruised, never got a picture taken of it. The officer asked me if I'd like to answer anything for him, and I said, no, I'd like to speak to a lawyer, and he told me, too bad, they're not calling one this late at night. When I was in the...
They don't have to call one, but you have a right to speak to one, calling yourself.
And yeah. My rights, I would like to say this, my rights were never read to me.
If they want to interrogate you, they have to read you your rights.
I was arrested, but without my rights being read to me. I wasn't informed of my charges against me. Both police procedures
resisting arrest. You were arrested for resisting arrest.
I was arrested for obstructing an officer.
Yeah.
Which, if anybody doesn't know, is a misdemeanor.
148, I think it is.
148A is the penal code.
That's actually how we came to our first encounter with each other was he walked up during the Huff meeting yesterday and said, what's 148A? And
yeah, yep. Yeah. Somebody had pointed me in your direction and said he would know. I was about to go into my holding cell. And they had to search me before I got admitted into the jail. Although they had just run my pockets and had all of my stuff from when they searched me at the scene. So the officer, or the sheriff, not the officer, the sheriff at the jail, I'm still in handcuffs, standing next to a wall, and she asks me what my name is, and... You know, she told me that she was going to search me, and I told her I do not consent to a search. And I figured I'd cover my bases. And she's
jails
like...
Jails usually search you whether you consent or not.
Exactly.
And so do police officers incident to arrest, so...
Exactly. Yeah. The sheriff then tried to push me into the wall to lean me up against it, apparently. And I stopped myself from hitting my head against the wall, and... I didn't push her. I just held myself up, and she told me that if I had done that again, that I was going to end up on the fucking ground.
Fucking ground. What kind of language is that for an officer of the law?
I don't know. I think they're supposed to be role models, though.
Well, actually, I think we at Free Radio appreciate that kind of fucking candor. Go
ahead. The officer or the sheriff continued to like prod me for my name. She brought in a nurse to ask me a couple of questions. I guess I got medical attention because somebody in the medical field paid attention to me.
Did she examine your bruises?
No. No, he did not.
He did not.
He just asked me if I was pregnant or if I was going to withdraw from any drugs or anything like that. So.
Did you attempt to inform him of your injuries?
Yes, I told him about my neck and my wrist and my back and about my dreadlock.
And his response was?
He wrote it. He looked like he was making marks on paper and then walked out of the room.
So he might have taken a report.
Might have.
But he had no name to attach to the report.
Exactly. And then the officer... the sheriff continued to ask me what my name was, and I finally made it a deal with her when she was taking my rings and stuff from me. I hear a lot of my friends going to jail and coming out with, rings or money or clothing or shoes, things like that missing, and I told her that I would cooperate by telling her my name or answering simple questions that would help her fill out her paperwork if I got all of my stuff back, if I got her personal promise that I would get all of my stuff back. And she looked directly into the camera and promised that.
And you believed her?
I believed her to a certain extent.
Did she keep her promise?
Yeah, I got all of my stuff back, including a half a cigarette, which I was surprised I got back. Normally they throw away stuff like that.
Did the police take any of your property and sequester it before you reached the jail?
My smoking pipe.
smoking tobacco or the evil marijuana?
The evil marijuana.
Aha.
Yes.
Did you have your card with you, your California card?
No, because I left my backpack where the officer told me to leave my backpack with my ID in it.
So you do have a California medical marijuana card?
Yes.
Can you prove that now? Well, we have to get tough with her, folks. Sorry, go ahead. We're talking with Cynthia Kennedy, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz about an incident that happened on Saturday night where Cynthia was accosted by Officer Azua, apparently took exception to her A, eating a burrito, and or B, not moving along, and or C, not identifying herself. It's a little unclear what particular problem Officer Azua had with you.
Maybe he didn't like my hair.
Could have been your hair.
No, that was the other officer that ripped it out.
Yes.
Sorry, I got him mixed up. Mm. I sat in a holding cell for a couple of hours. I'm not sure how long. I went to sleep. But I continued to ask them what my charges were. I asked them, you know, when I was going to get released. They told me that, every time I'd ask them what my charges were, they'd ask and, like, they'd say they were going to go check, and they'd never come back.
Oh, they were very busy at the jail.
Oh, yeah. It was a busy, crazy Saturday night. There's probably a lot of people like me in there, just crazy, you know, criminals getting off
the
street.
You're refusing to identify yourselves and offending Officer Azua's sense of the need to maintain authority.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the sheriff, they fingerprinted me and took my picture, and they told me that they couldn't find me anywhere in the system. I told them of a crime I committed back in 2006 where I had been fingerprinted and booked. I had informed them of all of the information that they needed to find out about, you know, all of that.
Would you confess here to what that crime was?
It was shoplifting.
Aha, so you were a known thief. And what did you steal?
I was stealing clothes.
And fencing them, no doubt, on the high merchandise market.
Not exactly. No, they were for personal use.
Did you serve a term in jail for this?
I did not. I had community service and a fine.
Well, apparently you didn't learn your lesson. But Officer Zua was right to keep an eye on you. Go
yes,
ahead.
Yes. Dangerous thieving criminals. Mm-hmm. I forgot where I was.
You're saying, was asking
oh, yeah, and she said that she couldn't find me anywhere in the system, and without ID, that I wasn't going to be released within 5 hours. And I told her that Officer Azua told me to leave my pack at the scene with my friends. And she said, well, you know, we have no place to hold that here. Well, that's where my ID is. That's my house. That's... I live on the street. Where else do you expect me to put my stuff? the sheriff then told me that I was going to be going into just a general population, and I was going to be on cell restriction.
Because?
I have no idea. They just told me I was going to be on cell restriction.
This is in the women's section of the jail?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when I was on restriction, I never left my cell for the 3 days that I was in there. I was in there from Saturday night, probably around 1 o'clock, until Tuesday afternoon, a little bit after, like, lunchtime,
mm-hmm.
Probably maybe, like, 2 or 3 o'clock. While I was in jail, I requested to take a shower. They wouldn't let me out to take a shower, or they'd tell me they'd be there in a few minutes and they'd never come. I requested to use the phone to call a lawyer. I requested to use the phone in general.
You were allowed one phone call initially to talk to your father?
I made that call in the holding cell. They have a thing where it informs people of how they can put money on your thing so you can talk to people, and you get one free minute to talk to any number, but they never tell you that it's a minute. It says a free phone call, but it's a minute long.
It's gotten shorter, I guess. Maybe Mike Rotkin's shortening the time rules at city council has been applied to the jail as well, in order to save the taxpayers money in these circumstances.
Of course.
Yes.
And I asked to speak to a therapist while I was there, too. I actually had been told that one was going to be coming to see me because I informed the doctor that had given me the nurse that had given me my TB test before I got brought in that I have severe PTSD, anxiety, depression. Like, I have all of, like, I've been diagnosed with these, and I've been living with them for years. That's part of the reason I have my dog, and I'm always around people, is because without people, I get really off. And mentally, that's not okay for me, and I know where to be. So being in a cell by myself for 3 days, after informing them of my medical, or my mental disability, kind of doesn't make sense.
We don't like to call it torture. Let's call it gentle persuasion.
Yeah, gentle persuasion.
Sort of a way to show you just who the Santa Cruz police and the Santa Cruz sheriffs are and mm-hmm. how we treat people who don't wish to be compliant. It's a mm-hmm. lesson. It's sort of a life lesson.
Yeah. Everybody should try it out. No, I'm being completely sarcastic. Please don't. Anybody that is listening, please don't. every time I would ask when my pretrial was, because I was told that I would be released on pretrial or if somebody bailed me out. And I would ask.
What was your bail?
$1,000.
For the charge of obstructing an officer?
Allegedly. They never told me what the charge was. The only form that I have that I signed was for my property when I left. And it was a field report sheet. It was not a...
didn't have a court date.
It didn't have a court date, and it had the obstructing an officer charge on there, but to this day I still don't know what I'm being charged with, if anything.
Mm. Have you tried calling the jail to see if there's a... a record of your case or gone to the courthouse to see it?
I was actually going to do that this following week.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe tomorrow when you go down to check out the trial of sinister song singer Becky Johnson at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, you can peek in at your own records.
Exactly. Yeah. I can. Yes. What did I just say?
You were released.
Before I was released, I was asking them about about when my pretrial was, and they, all of the sheriffs there would tell me that they'd go check and they'd be right back and they'd never answer, they'd never come back. I'd push the button for the intercom on my, in my cell. Somebody would say they'll check, hours would go by, I'd push the button and ask them again, and they'd say the same thing and never answer again.
So there is a personnel shortage at the jail.
Because it's...
being sarcastic, folks. Although there may well be, we are doing budget cutbacks, but you don't tell someone you're going to go check and then not check unless you wish to. I guess you're either incompetent, extremely overworked, or malicious.
I had actually even seen the same sheriff that I had asked to go check 15, 20 minutes later. She didn't say anything to me. Then she had come to my cell an hour later to give me food, and I had asked her about it, and she said that I hadn't been there long enough and shut my cell door on me. I was told Monday before lunch that I would be released sometime after dinner, and after dinner, about 8 o'clock, when everybody was starting to go to sleep, I was like, I haven't been released yet. So I pushed the button for the intercom, and I asked the people, I was like, well, when am I getting released? I was told I was getting released after dinner. And she's like, well, you haven't been here for 72 hours, and you don't have bail, and you haven't been to court, so...
So in other words, is this the same woman who gave this information or a different woman?
A different woman.
Right. So apparently the first one was either an error or not telling you the truth. So, in any case, we're talking with Cynthia Kennedy. We're talking with her about 20 minutes. It's It's a longer story than I usually put on the air, and we're actually going to be hearing it again at some point, I think, because the tape will play. I interviewed you yesterday, and we talked about this at the right outside the Huff meeting, which, by the way, is every Wednesday, 10:30 to 12:30, Sub Rosa Cafe. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, an organization concerned with police abuse like this, and particularly civil rights violations around poor and homeless people, of which you apparently seem to be one.
Mm-hmm.
You've been out since. Have you talked to any of your friends, and have you written down your account or what went down? That's always a good suggestion.
Yeah, I've started. I wrote down basically just the gist of what happened, and I'm starting to go back through and write in more detail and talk to other people that have seen, like that were at the scene and watched what happened, because I'd like to have a well-rounded story instead of just a one-sided story.
But you have been able to find a few of your witnesses.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, make sure you either record them. I would suggest tape recording them. Maybe you can bring them into I'll come to the court tomorrow, and I'll have a tape recorder there, and we can record their accounts over a bagel breakfast, which is to say mostly bagels and maybe coffee, tomorrow morning at 9:30 right outside the court at 701 Ocean Street, which is in front of the main courthouse in Santa Cruz. If you want to come down and then check out the trial of Becky Johnson for sinister sidewalk street singing. It's kind of hard to say fast. I'm going to take a little musical break here, but let me give you anything you want to add about this before I leave it?
The only thing I have to say is it's not for me, it's for everybody else. I wouldn't want to see anybody else in the situation I was in. There is no reason for it, and it shouldn't be tolerated by anybody.
Didn't tolerate it. You stood up to
exactly. And not, aggression is not the way. Violence is not the way. Swearing is not the way. Like, keep your cool and do it in a respectful way. And I promise you'll get so much more out of it.
Although
than
you may lose a dread or two.
Yeah, you may lose a dread or two in the process. But you know, no pain, no gain.
A lot of dignity here, and a lot of courage, and a lot of persistence. Sitting across from me here in the Free Radio studio, assuming your account is accurate, of course.
Yep.
Which I have no way of knowing.
This is actually my first full week in Santa Cruz, so, and I've already been to jail. Go figure.
Here, you know what they say, good girls go to heaven, but bad girls go everywhere.
Oh, apparently. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, stay with us if you want. You're welcome to hang on as a co-host, or you take off, whichever you want to do.
Okay.
If anybody wants to call in, has any questions for Cynthia Kennedy or me, or stories of your own that you wish to put up, 427-3772 is the call-in number, 427-FRSC. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, also known as Freak Radio. And if you want to reach us, that's the number. If you want to reach me off-air, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F is the number, 423-4833. And I will get back to you after number of hours delay for picking up the call and so forth. If you don't have a place you can be reached because you are houseless, you're shit out of luck. And actually, yes, you are, but if you can give me a place where you normally go, possibly I'll be there at one time or another, possibly not. I do tend to kind of check out Pacific Avenue in front of New Leaf and other places at odd times of the day. I'm often at the, what's it called? It's called the Beanies and Burritos meal that Rene Curry throws in front of Borders, the bookstore Borders, on Sunday afternoon, 2 or 3 or 4 thereabouts. But keep your ears open, keep your eyes open, and keep listening, and we'll get back to you after this musical break. You can get back to us again at
423-4773.
See, I need you as a producer here. 423. No, it's 427-3772. 423-4833 is the off-air number. 427-3772 is the on-air number.
One world, one love, one sun, one planet. One world, one love. Yeah.
Costa babies, baby, dancing in the sunlight. Rasta babies, baby, keep on dancing until you get it right. Well, 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 it's not only what I believe, love conquers hate. But come on, won't be long, there's something that y'all won't show good heart to see. Well, we're still babies, we're all Rasta. One world of love turning round till love's found. We're Rasta, we all are babies, baby. And child would never ever let your spirits down, no, no. Would you love me if I stood right here and dreamed all day about the peace when our hearts not one? No one tries to ever explain. Well, well, well. Instead of war, tell me why people don't smile every time their hearts beat. But come on and take my hand. I'ma close my eyes right now so I don't have to see. But still, we're babies, we all a Rasta. One world, one heart turning down to your fell. We are babies, we all a Rasta, babies. And child would never ever let your spirits down, no, no, no.
Yeah, that was a bit of Rasta Babies from the Street Songs DVD by, I think it's Aziz, if I have it right. Aziz, another guy with dreads on the street, African-American guy who often plays outside New Leaf, the Officer Azua's territory, his hunting ground, so to speak. Or so it seems, if your tale is accurate. So, I'm looking online, and I find on the City Insider, which is a column in the San Francisco Chronicle, which I read, unfortunately, rather religiously for no good reason. Usually it's the second section, the B section, that has interesting little tidbits that occasionally attract my attention. This is about the law up in San Francisco that Mike Rotkin here, our mayor down in Santa Cruz, champions, that makes it will make it illegal in San Francisco to sit down anywhere in the city on any sidewalk. I think it's between the hours of 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. I'm not quite sure if those are the exact hours. Here in Santa Cruz, it's illegal 24 hours a day within 14 feet of any business or any building, sidewalk kiosk, crosswalk, art sculpture, phone booth, or phone bench. There's a whole bunch of sidewalk restrictions, and I was listening earlier to the debate around the new parking meter art panhandling structures that are supposed to be used by the community to put your money in to give to the social services so they can provide those services to the hapless homeless who will not then waste the money that you might otherwise pass on to them so they can break the vicious cycle of homelessness in a new 10-year plan to chatter about and fund poverty pimps. I'm sorry, to end homelessness, as they like to call it. But anyway, SitLie, I digress, as usual. SitLie is this law in San Francisco that's being proposed by some Haight-Ashbury real estate moguls and some nervous residents who are concerned, they claim, about groups of roaming thugs who sit on corners with their pit bulls and cause trouble. You spent some time in San Francisco, Cynthia.
Yeah, actually, I just left San Francisco not too long ago.
Did you get bitten by one of those roaming pit bulls?
I actually have one of the most vicious 4-month-old pit bulls on Hay Street.
So we've actually captured one of these people alive.
Yeah,
I have to hold here until Officer Azua gets down. Azua, get here quickly. Could you please go ahead?
It's ridiculous. Street kids have dogs. They're good dogs. I mean, some dogs aren't always nice, but some people that live in houses, their dogs aren't always nice.
Have you seen problems? Have you been on the Hate much?
Yeah, the Hate is actually where I spent most of my time.
How long were you there for?
I was there since mid-February.
So you were there actually at the height of the sit-lie controversy.
Yep.
It still goes on up there.
Yep, I was there when the protests started, and I was at a few of the protests.
Were you there when Mayor Newsom wandered through and saw someone smoking crack and then announced he changed his mind and wanted to make sure that anyone who sat down got a ticket citywide?
Yeah.
That's our mayor. Actually, that's their mayor, thank God. Although ours is probably a bit worse in his own way. Mayor Rutkin, go ahead.
I mean, like, there's not always good people, but there's not always bad people. And, like, that's a fact of life. I think we've all learned that no matter where you go, there's going to be people you don't like. And it's life. Like,
well, the main...
Like, the people sitting on the sidewalk, a lot of them stay awake during at night. During the night, the people that are sleeping during the day stay awake at night, and they sleep during the day because the officers don't want them on the sidewalk at night, or they get woken up, or they have insomnia and they've been woken up and given tickets.
You mean they
stuff.
Sleep on the sidewalk during the day?
Yes.
Isn't that kind of obstructive of the sidewalk?
Because they block the way. No. A lot of them sleep up against the walls. They're completely out of the way. The way the obstructing the sidewalk law reads in San Francisco right now is you have to be physically blocking somebody's path so much that they have to go into the street to get around you.
So that's why the Haight-Ashbury conservative forces claim that they want to create this new, certainly Haight-Ashbury-wide, but probably citywide, sit-lie ban.
I think right now it's more focused on the Haight, more specifically around, if anybody's familiar with it, the Hippie Hill area, Golden Gate Park. It's more angled at that area. They might try to do it for the rest of the city, but you never know.
So, you're saying that, the law is, as proposed by Newsom, as I understand it, is framed during the daylight hours. That's what the papers are saying.
Oh, that's what the paper says?
I don't know if it's true, but that's what the paper says. I mean, it would seem to me, are you saying that the reason that people can sleep during the day is maybe it's too embarrassing for the police to wake them up, and they can do so? I'm taking the point of view that maybe the police don't like to wake them up at night because... Or maybe the police would prefer to wake them up at night because there's nobody else around, or they can be a little more, rough if they need to be in order to, do an Azua on them, so to speak.
Yeah. I was in the woods, so you don't even have to be on the street. I was in the woods, and an officer came up and kicked a pack out from underneath my head and ended up kicking me in the side of the face. And when I woke up swinging because I thought I was being robbed... the officer told me that I needed to calm down, otherwise I was going to go to jail.
And so this was sort of curbside, make it up as you go, or he had some ordinance he was enforcing?
He was coming to wake me up for camping in Golden Gate Park.
Right, I know the law has become more severe about camping in Golden Gate Park as of, I guess, a couple of years ago.
It's just a simple citation. They wake you up and they tell you to leave, but they wake you up a half hour before the park opens.
And the significance of that is you have to hit the streets?
You can sleep there when the park is opened. The camping law, as long as your face is not covered, you're not camping. So you can be covered up with a blanket up to your head, but you can't have your face covered. And basically I would have to
sort
go to
of
the
religious
street.
Thing. They want your face to face the stars or what?
Probably. So they can make sure that you're still breathing. It's, Sleeping Beauty type thing.
Oh, well, it could
in case
be
your Prince Charming comes
fund.
Along.
But do a lot of people get... Did you sleep regularly in Golden Gate Park when you were up there?
I slept there for a while, and then I got really tired of getting woken up. There was one time it had been raining for about a week, and we had set up tarps so that all of our stuff would stay dry, and we were...
You were in a group of people throughout
this
time.
We were deep into the woods, and we were cleaning up all of our trash. Like, we had a little thing set together so that way, we were completely effective, and we weren't going to leave any mess. And the cops came up as the rain let up and grabbed all of our stuff, sleeping bags, packs, tarps, everything. And then the rain picked back up, and they said that they had no record of our stuff.
Sounds like Officer John Wallace. although Wallace's approach is to post your stuff and then come back in 3 days and despoil it in violation of state law and federal constitutional guarantees. That's our chief ranger, John Wallace, of Parks and Rec, who's honest about that policy. He says, you know, well, 3 days and then it's slash and burn time.
Well, I mean, if you don't want to pay our medical bills, then why are you taking something that I need to keep me warm and dry and not sick and out of your hospitals and out of your jails? Because, I mean, you know, if you're taking away things that I need to survive, then I need to get them somehow, and some people aren't, you know, always as resourceful and do things the legal way. So, I mean, like, I'm not saying that I'm one of those people, but I know that there are people like that out there. You know, you take somebody's sleeping bag or somebody's something, and they don't think of any other way to go get it, so they break the law, and then you've got another criminal on your hand, you know?
That's entirely too rational an argument for you to respond to. However, there has been some developments in San Francisco around this law, according to the City Insider of, I haven't got the date on this, but it looks fairly recent. It seems everyone's weighing in on Mayor Gavin Newsom's proposal to ban sitting or lying on the public sidewalk citywide, with calls for changing the legislation coming from some surprising quarters. The Planning Commission and the Small Business Commission both recently voiced their opposition to the legislation. And I think there was a reference to that. The latter wants Newsom to revisit his previous idea of banning the behavior in just commercial districts, which is what business owners care most about. Other business leaders proposed their own version that would include a variety of specific measurements for where sitting or lying would be prohibited, that gets the Santa Cruz model, like within 8.5 feet of a building. But the Santa Cruz model says 14 feet. We're better, you see. We make sure the sidewalks are swept free of your kind. The idea was apparently based on Santa Cruz, where sitting on a curb is allowed, but sitting in the middle of a sidewalk is not. You see, it's much safer. Actually, that's really misinformation. Sitting in the middle of a sidewalk is not really allowed, but the real reality is sitting next to a building, even a closed building, even a building that is you know, not, has no business in it,
yep,
is illegal, even at 3 a.m.
Yep.
And Courtney was taken away to jail for doing that late at night. She's the woman who danced naked felt like she could be naked 3 weeks ago at the farmer's market. And actually the police, to their credit, respected Santa Cruz law, which allows nudity provided it's not lewdity. But then they ticketed her jeweler friend because they wanted to let her know she couldn't get away with that entirely. She had to pay some kind of a price for her insolence. But she was taken away, you know, not because of any naked stuff, but because she was sitting next to a building. And like you, she wondered, what am I being busted for? We're sitting next to a building. In her case, it was a law.
Yeah.
And in your case, too, it was a law that, you know, that you obeyed. You got up. She didn't want to get up. She said, this is ridiculous. Why should I have to get up? And, of course, it is. It's completely ridiculous.
I mean, in San Francisco, I would have continued to sit there. But since it was against the law, I figured, you know, I don't want to give him the reason to give me a ticket if he just asked me to stand up.
Well, my point is, this is kind of journalism that says, if you can sit on the curb, it's allowed, but sitting in the middle of a sidewalk is not. It's true that sitting in the middle of a sidewalk is not if it's less than 14 feet from a building. But sitting off to the side of a sidewalk in a non-obstructive way is also not legal in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm. Again, simply to pander to the paranoia and the privileges and the preferences of merchants.
Well, what about the bars, you know, or the clubs or the restaurants that people stand outside and smoke cigarettes at? You know, I mean, they're standing, but they're
not
still...
not legal anymore in Santa Cruz to smoke on Pacific Avenue.
I mean, I've seen it on Pacific since I've been here.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Call the police.
I might as well, you know. I mean, they're criminals. They should be taken to jail. I've had business owners in San Francisco actually thank me for sitting in front and being a traveler and being the type of person that I am, because we bring them business. We keep the street alive. We keep the money flowing on Hay Street. Like, I mean, if
can't
if,
stop the music, baby.
Exactly. Like, I mean, where do we get all of our stuff from? We get it from the street that we sit on. Like, you know, I mean, all of the money that goes into our pocket ends up spent on that street. I mean, Like,
yeah, but we don't want your kind around here.
Oh, because we smell that. I mean, then maybe there should be something legitimately done about us. I mean, you know, extermination, I hear, is great.
Or public showers.
Public showers. Oh, hey.
That might help. Although...
Free soap?
I can't smell too much at the moment. But Steve Falk, head of the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, this article continues, says the idea is dead on arrival here. Applying that in San Francisco is much different than a small community, Falk said. On Market Street, for example, 8.5 feet from the building puts you right in the middle of the sidewalk because the sidewalks are so wide. So we should take the Santa Cruz 14 feet from the building, you see. The chamber is debating whether to support a citywide or commercial district ban and is meeting Monday with a supervisor, Michaela Eliotto-Peer, the new co-sponsor of Newsom's legislation, to come up with a solution. The strongest proponent of keeping the citywide ban is Police Chief George Gascon, who believes, or is it Gascon? I'm not sure. Sorry, George, I don't know your name properly. Who believes a commercial district ban would simply push the behavior out into the neighborhoods. So where does Newsom stand on CitLi? His spokesperson, Tony Winokur, said the mayor has always been okay with either strategy, but is unlikely to change his own legislation before it comes before the Board of Supervisors, which is expected next month. The difference between the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco and the City Council here in Santa Cruz, or even the Board of Supervisors at the county level here in Santa Cruz, is that there actually are some liberals on the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco. There is no such thing as a liberal in Santa Cruz on any homeless issues. We do have a caller. Hi, you are on Free Radio with Robert and Cynthia.
Hello, Robert.
Hi.
I sent you an article on sleep deprivation. Did you get that?
You mean like tonight?
No, I sent it to you a week or so ago.
I think I might have, yeah. Forgive me, it's been a while, and my mind is stumbling over the events of the last week, but yeah, probably.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, it was from a fairly reputable source, and it knows what we all know, that sleep deprivation is in essence a torture.
Right.
And note for each police officer, find out when they are on their rotating shifts or when they get off of them to go back to day shift, and just observe them and see how temperamental they get. And that might be a good tool on how to actually approach these officers, just going, oh, God, I know you just got off late night shift, and just stay away from them, or, you know, in essence, try and find out how they tick. And you may, in fact, be able to deal with them in a different manner, knowing where they're coming from.
Wouldn't that be called stalking?
Hmm. You know, it's interesting. It's John, yes?
Yes.
You know, I if you ask Sergeant Harms, and in fact, if you ask most Santa Cruz police officers sort of casually, they'll tell you when their shift is, usually.
Yeah.
So that could be done. It's just... their shifts tend to change,
right?
And so it's kind of hard to judge. And you know, frankly, I don't want to try to second guess police officers. I kind of expect them, probably quite unrealistically, to follow the law and the Constitution. And in fact, I don't really expect them to do either of those things. But I expect the community to see what they do and to have them eventually shamed, trained, or bullied. And I hate to use that word, but that, in essence, really is, to some extent, what needs to be done when police officers are pulling people's dreads out and falsely arresting them and laughing as they do. When we have that kind of thing, if these charges are accurate, and Officer Azua, if you want to call in and contest what Cynthia Kennedy is saying here, please do. I'd be happy to give you a full forum. I intend to ask you about it the next time I see you on the street. Yeah, I mean, I catch your message, John. I don't regard myself as much of a therapist, probably in need of therapy more than anything else.
Well, I think it might fit in with one of the things you just said, trained.
Uh-huh.
You want to find out how to understand how they are trained relative to their dealings with their interactions with people, because that's what we're dealing with here. It's just interactions with people. Some, like, I think Cynthia is her name.
Yes.
Yeah, Cynthia, I heard you just a little while ago. There's just some people we do not like, and that's true. But if an officer is coming off of his late-night shift on today and he's trying to get reoriented and you just don't like him, you're just going to go, well, you know, all the Constitution should be applied equally, but we are human. So if you can approach things just a little bit differently, you know, well, I want to get along in this world as much as possible. I know there's some people I just like to punch because they're just assholes.
With the officer, an officer of the law, if you cannot handle the pressure of your job, or of what you're doing, or in the stress that comes with it, full on knowing that you're becoming a police officer and that you're going to have to deal with this, then it shouldn't be the job for you.
Well, I understand that, but reality comes into play.
But if you can't handle yourself under the pressure, you're one step before a judge. Like, you're supposed to be neutral and observing and stepping in when things are wrong. And if nothing is wrong, you shouldn't be stepping in. And if you're stepping in falsely and you're wrong, you should be able to admit that fault. And regardless of what's going on in your personal life, that shouldn't be brought to work in any work setting. I mean,
okay.
I've worked a job. Like, I'm not just a random street kid. Like, I've worked a job, and, like, I've had personal things go on. I've had people die. I've had stuff like that happen. And I can separate my work from my personal life. And if you can't do that, then you need to find a
different
job.
Yeah, and I think also the idea of trying to orient yourself around what might be the sensitivities of the, you know, the local SS man or Gestapo guy. And I say that, you know, I know that's an exaggeration, and he immediately says, well, that ruins the argument. But no, it emphasizes the fact that when police officers go bad, or when police departments go bad, even worse, or when the Constitution gets trampled underfoot, as has been happening in this country for, you know, many a moon, and certainly explicitly for the last decade, you have to, this is the citizenry we have to rely on to restore the rights of everyone involved. And a lot of people, you know, are more likely to stand up for stuff when some people stand up strongly. And as I think, Cynthia, if your account is accurate, that you seem to have done, in this involvement with Officer Azua, I think, yeah, I can't really, I don't think in those terms, John, in terms of, you know, trying to, I mean, if an officer tells me he has a problem, as a human being, I'll be sympathetic. But he shouldn't be, as Cynthia, as you say, he shouldn't be on the job, at least that he can call in sick if he has a problem. You know, we shouldn't try to accommodate the moods of police officers. They need to enforce the law, and they need to respect the rights of citizens, and that's, and non-citizens for that matter, everybody in the community.
Then maybe we should ask the city council or the police chief if police can get more personal health days.
Yeah,
maybe
well,
that'll help alleviate the
police
problem.
Department get a lot. I mean, and that may well be the case.
You know?
John, is there more? Any other questions you had, or any other points you wanted to make?
Well, just one point further relative to how they go on the different shifts. I used to really be oriented. I worked from 8 in the evening to about 4 in the morning.
Right.
And I just loved that. That was great for me.
Uh-huh.
What if you had police officers that it was just a great shift for them, and pretty much leave them on that shift where they don't have to rotate around, disrupting their circadian rhythms and things like that? It's just, you know, I want to see us all live together because we are in this town.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, I think these are good suggestions, you know, maybe to, but the problem is, before any of that, police officers, if they are, power is corrupting, as you know, it can usually is, and therefore, when you notice that corruption, as I've seen quite clearly happening over the last 20 years, in my experience here, just by the hundreds of interviews I've done on the air, police officers abuse their authority pretty regularly in Santa Cruz, and the city council pretty regularly backs them up. And that is a profound problem and corruption we have, which really antedates, you know, the idea of, well, you know, if only we were a little more considerate of understanding of the circadian rhythms of the police department. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be sensitive to the rhythms of everybody, whoever, whatever their job is, for sure. But, you know, yeah, I mean to me, the issue is a more primary one. Let me leave it at that with you, and thank you for calling in, man.
Okay, have a good one. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. In the studio with me is Cynthia Kennedy, fighting back, or let's say growing new hair against police hairdressers or hair removers. I'm not sure how we're going to put it.
Hair removal systems.
On Sunday, I'll be coming back at 9:30 in the morning, and I will have we'll be doing the second part of the interview with traveling Tom Noddy, who's now a world-famous bubble blower. If you're a bubble person, he blows bubbles you can stand in the middle of and so forth. But he, at 30 years ago, He was a homeless a van dwelling guy, and he was involved in the longest misdemeanor trial in municipal court history, the Scott Creek Bluff group, who were tried on in 1978. And I played the first part of that interview last Sunday, and I'm going to play the next part of that trial. That was a trial where the defendants were found not guilty by way of jury nullification. Their defense was truth. They admitted all their crimes, and they urged the jury to quit them anyway, and the jury did. It was an amazing phenomenon. It was very heartening to experience and particularly to hear about, my memory of it. I was actually there for some of the trial, but my recollection of the trial is not the best. I'm going to play a little something from the streets that happened before I got into the studio. It's not terribly conclusive. It had to do with a police incident that happened that I didn't witness and that I was too late for, but that a number of people did and were concerned about. And I'm also next Sunday, by the way, you can hear Al Williams from Fresno, who'll be talking about life on the streets in Fresno, which has a number of large homeless encampments. This is the city where the homeless won $2.3 million in the Kincaid settlement. And they forced the city to agree not to destroy homeless property, although they seem to be reneging somewhat on their promises and going after homeless encampments anyway. But there is still a significant resistance in Fresno. He'll be talking about that. And that'll be, I'm not sure, 10 maybe in... I'll also, of course, be reporting on Becky Johnson's trial. I'm going to try to record it, but Judge Simons doesn't seem to like to have her stuff from her courtroom made public to the community through the public process of media. And I can understand why, actually, given the kind of prosecutorial role she inappropriately has taken in a number of cases. But I'm nonetheless going to try to do that tomorrow, and I invite you to come on down and check out Becky Johnson. She's the woman who's accused of sinister sidewalk song singing, meaning she sang songs like, "When you're alone and rents are making you homeless, you can always go downtown." Along with me and a bunch of others in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, which is the lair of Vice Mayor Ryan Coonerty, who... I can't tell if he liked the song or not, but several residents nearby said they didn't, and they had got the police to issue us a citation, and Becky goes to trial on that citation tomorrow.
Maybe we should start a band, Criminal Singers.
I like it. In fact,
there you go. It's got a nice twist to it, you know?
Yeah.
Some twang.
This could be Officer Azua now. Let's see if he's calling in. Hi there. Is this Officer Azua?
No, I can't hear you on the radio, Robert. What's up?
You can't? My goodness. Well, let's see what's going on here. I can't tell if we're actually going out or not. It sounds like... yeah, we are. It sounds like the signal's a little weak, but we are going out on the radio.
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah. You got to get yourself a computer or else move in closer to the studio there, caller.
Yeah, we have trouble on the computer, too.
Maybe we'll see you in court with a certain audio machine that is accused of criminal behavior.
Probably not tomorrow. I'll probably just be the prosecutor presenting their case tomorrow.
It's possible, although, you know, the prosecutor could end their case. What's going to happen, by the way, for those who are listening to the Johnson trial tomorrow, is the prosecution witness, there's only two of them, I think, maybe three at most, if they call on the police officer as a witness, they're going to be Sean Riley, who was the individual living above the bookshop who didn't like the singing, and his associate or friend or somebody else up there, Ann Funk. And that may not take too long, so that may be a necessary item, Mr. Caller, who I recognize.
That organ will be on the radio Tuesday between 6 and 8 p.m. We're calling it the Infractionator.
The Infractionator. If the Infractionator is nearer the court, it might be helpful for the defense tomorrow.
It's probably even illegal to play it in that area as well. It's a citywide ordinance, isn't it?
Yeah, we're talking about, of course, a small keyboard, which...
amplified sound device.
Which is a so-called amplified sound device. But if it is played at conversational level, and that can vary with the conversational level on the street, it is... it depends on whether it's considered a radio or a TV played at conversational level, and I suppose technically it's not, but it's an interesting question.
That public address system at the metro that's blaring every day.
Yes, that's another story, and any of the other things that are happening downtown which don't have permits and which are amplified sound but which don't get hassled. Anyway, I think you caught my message there, caller. I apologize to the rest of the community for
speaking
cryptically to my caller. Anything you wanted to talk about other than saying that we have a weak signal, caller?
Well, I also sent you some sites pertaining to that case in your email.
Yeah, I know. You did send me some legal sites which might be helpful for the defense tomorrow in the Becky Johnson case. I think, frankly, I'm pessimistic about the possible outcome of that case, not because Becky is in any way guilty. She isn't. I can testify to that. I was a witness. There was no unreasonably disturbing evidence whatsoever. And you, too, are a witness. The problem is that the city attorney is putting his prestige behind this case, it looks like, although he insisted, by the way, I learned earlier today, that he was not the prosecutor, the city attorney assistant. He was simply there to resolve constitutional issues. But that's kind of funny, because if that were the case, why did he appear in court on Tuesday and on behalf of the prosecution refuse to allow and challenge a continuance sought by the defense, Becky Johnson, and her attorney, Ed Frye? So it seems the city attorney is either less than candid or perhaps confused in his description of his role. It's a little, and it's you know, I always like to give John Barisoni, weaselly as he may look, as he sits at city council when you see him at the city council meetings, and I was watching him a little bit tonight as I reviewed one of their tapes. I like to think of him as a good guy. I mean, in a sense, because I've talked to him personally. I've seen him. I've sat next to him at parades.
He's a good lawyer. I got to say that.
Well, I don't know about his lawyering, but I know that
because of the Constitution, I got to say, you know, if you know anything about the Constitution, why do we have all these cockamamie laws now?
Well, as a human being, I don't mind John Barisoni, but as an attorney and how the kinds of laws he represents, and also it seems to me the kinds of things he is now saying to people who are asking him questions about why are you taking a woman singing political songs to trial, and he says, I'm not prosecuting her, I'm just called in by the judge in case there are constitutional arguments. That's the responsibility of the individual who is a citizen who's making an arrest, has that responsibility herself or himself to do that job, and for him to step in and then do it and claim he's not doing it, you know, is dishonest. And I hate to accuse our city attorney of dishonesty.
Yeah, well, where's there probable cause? Citizen arrest without a probable cause is unconstitutional.
And that, of course, has to do with the police officer's ignorance or malevolence or dishonesty. We're talking about Officer Schoenfield, who arrested, what she did was she took a citizen arrest of four people for playing political songs outside the Bookshop Santa Cruz back in January, when what appeared to be the case was that Sean Riley wanted to drive away those people from under his window in the middle of the day so he could sleep, which I can understand, but, you know, he is not entitled to shut down Pacific Avenue for his own personal, needs. Although, again, one can be sympathetic with those needs. I also understand that someone from that same apartment, and it could have been him, has been responsible for multiple calls to the police department in the last 2 months and going after other performers under the window because that person does not have an ordinary sensitiveness to noise, which is the standard. The standard for this conviction under this law is a rather, as I continue to bring up whenever we discuss the issue and will be brought up tomorrow, is a rather harsh and high one. And that standard is, if you want to find someone guilty of unreasonably disturbing noises, you have to show that they make, cause, suffer, or permit to be made any noises or sounds which are unreasonably disturbing or physically annoying to persons of ordinary sensitiveness, or which are so harsh or so prolonged or so unnatural or unusual in their use, time, or place as to cause physical discomfort in any person. Notice the word loud is not used at all in here. So volume isn't really the issue. It has to be something beyond the volume. And it also has to, you also have to show that these noises, sounds, music, whatever it is, are not necessary in connection with an activity otherwise legally conducted.
Well, it is actually, music is necessary to political speech. It adds more force to the message.
I think so.
McDonald's has their jingle.
By Cracky. We deserve a break today, by Cracky.
Exactly. And they switch it to the amplified sound charge. I mean, the amplified sound was gone before the tickets were even written.
Well, I don't think they have an amplified sound charge. They have a reference to the fact that a keyboard was played, which was technically amplified, but which wasn't beyond really the conversational level on the sidewalk. I would argue that for sure. And there is some evidence in the tapes we made. We made tapes of this. We played tapes back on the air. City attorney knows it. The defendant, or the complainant, Sean Riley, who's coming after us, and his associate, Funk.
You're playing some of that Tuesday, 6 to 8.
And you have another show in which you've already played some of it, and you're going to be playing
we'll do it again, because that won't finish the trial.
You'll be playing it on Tuesday, 6 yeah. to 6 to 8. I suspect the trial will be done faster than you think, but I would, you know, it'd be interesting to see what's going on with that. Appreciate the call. Free, anything else you want to say?
That's it, Robert.
Thanks for calling in, man.
Alrighty, bye.
Bye-bye. See you tomorrow. And I hope I see others out there tomorrow, including you, Cynthia, if you want
yes,
to get down there
I
in the morning.
Yes, I will definitely be out there.
We'll try to provide some bagels, which isn't much,
no.
for people in front of the courthouse at 9:30, although our usual food provider is got other things he has to do. He's also going to be a witness in this case. So there's going to be Joe Schultz, who is opening a restaurant downtown, a vegan restaurant, who had in this town a very successful restaurant, India Joe's, for a decade or more downtown, and who himself was arrested for serving the homeless free food in 1989. Charges dismissed. It was a false arrest, of course, similar to this arrest. He will be a witness in this case as well. So it's amazing to me that the city is wasting its time on this. We attempted to persuade them not to waste its time. We went to the city council on Tuesday. We talked to city council, and I actually made a recording of that, which I now do not have time to play because we've been doing other things. But in a way, we've talked about this case so much and emphasized it so many times and played over what actually happened on January 6th, which was nothing particularly unusual. We did interviews, and we gave out leaflets in front of the bookshop about homeless deaths in the county of Santa Cruz, how they've risen almost threefold from the year before. So it's almost three times as many deaths. I think it went up to 58 after when you take the official total of 47 and you add the extra 11 yes. that were found at the homeless memorial. And the year before it was in the 20s. So it was really...
That's astonishing.
It was quite astonishing. Now, who knows? The records are kept in a very, you know, haphazard way. Who knows what's going on? But we are bringing up the point that, you know, also homeless deaths happen at a much younger age. And you can, you know, in their 40s and 50s usually. And, you know, you might say, well, they're drugged, they're junkies, and they got their problem, they're off their meds, and, you know, and they're alcoholics, and all these things have truth to them. But it's also true that it's really hard to live outside. You medicate yourself. You suffer the assaults at 4 to 10 times the amount of people indoors in Santa Cruz. That was the chief of police's own statistic in Santa Cruz. We have a caller. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio with Cynthia and Robert.
Yes, I'm Uncle Dennis's fan from Los Angeles.
Oh, well, welcome.
And as a prelude, and I'm really interested about Cynthia. She's so well-spoken, articulate. You know, outside of her troubles, I haven't learned much about her, and I don't know if she'd like to share something, whether her lifestyle...
You know, I'd like that. The problem I have is I have 10 minutes left in this broadcast and more stuff I want to get through. But if you want to come back, Cynthia, on Sunday, if you happen to be around...
Yeah, I will actually be in town. So, yeah, I'd love to join you on Sunday.
And L.A. Man, if you want to listen in on Sunday, perhaps we can get into some of that.
Well, I'd like to know whether this is her choice. Whether she's doing it by choice or...
I choose to travel by choice, yes.
Oh, okay. Perhaps if you are there on Sunday, we'll talk then.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. And I do want to say that the Sentinel has contacted me, so J.M. Brown, not the most exciting reporter and not the... I want to say not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I don't know if that's fair because... I haven't really analyzed his writing very deeply. I usually have to suffer through Genevieve Bookwalter and Jennifer Squires and that of other Sentinel scribblers who are essentially puff piece writers for the Santa Cruz Police Department. So we'll see how he does. There will be a piece in the Good Times coming out, not today, but a week from today,
by Jacob Pierce on the street singer scene. And the thing to remember about this trial is it's not about one street singer or four, because four of us got citations. Michelle Doika's ticket was dropped after she was taken to court three times. And who knows? It's always conceivable that it may all be dropped tomorrow, although I find it would be really a strange kind of phenomenon if it is, but maybe it will be. But the real issue is not these four singers and the fact that there was a homeless protest that's being harassed. I mean, all these are important things. But the real reason that some of us seriously questioned the officer when she came up and said, there's been a complaint, we want you to move along, and then she modified her stance and said, or sing more quietly. And instead of saying sure and just letting it go at that and sing more quietly, we wanted to know, did you find us singing unreasonably loudly when you came up? Because we wanted to have a standard for it. And also, frankly, we wanted to deal with a heckler's veto, which is to say, if you found we weren't singing unreasonably loudly, go tell the person who filed the complaint that you don't think it's unreasonable noise, and let's drop this shit right now, because it's not unreasonable noise.
Exactly.
This is an attempt of somebody to drive away somebody they don't like, whether they don't like their political views, they don't like the sound of their music.
Or they don't like the group of people.
Or whatever the reason, you know, they should not have that veto. But the police department is not doing that. They are using this approach, and this is why Officer Schoenfield made this mistake. The police department, her mistake was to not hear us when we said, we'll sing more quietly. Go tell the person we'll sing more quietly. It's very simple. She wanted us to move. She didn't just want us to sing more quietly, because that's what she was directed to do by the police department. They are, I suspect, I don't have any evidence of this, hard evidence. I don't have any hard documented evidence. But it's happened so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's partially maybe because they have the Officer Azua complex. Forgive me, Officer Azua. If I'm listening to a lying woman here who's not telling me the truth, my apologies to you. She seems pretty calm about her account, and I tend to believe what she's saying. But I will hear your account, Laughing Boy, and see what you have to say.
I'd like to comment on what you said about homeless people being like junkies and alcoholics. Just what would you do if you were in somebody else's shoes? What would you do if you slept out in the rain for 3 days straight and you were cold? Like, what would you do if you were carrying an 80-pound pack on your back all day with no place to sit down and had cops hassling you? Like, what would you do? Honestly. Like, you wonder why people act the way we act? Like, why don't you take 2 seconds and stop and talk to somebody instead of just saying that we're bums and we're dirty?
Yeah, and for sure. And but the thing that I wanted to make clear of as well is that this is about all street performers. This is about anyone playing on the street where somebody else wants to eliminate them from the scene by saying that they're engaged in unreasonably disturbing noises. There certainly are times when some people probably are, and they can be properly told, you know, quiet down or move on, and that's a fair thing to say. But it's only fair if you are not just saying, if you don't move on, I'm going to give you a ticket, because some of the time there isn't unreasonable noise. In fact, I would say probably much of the time there isn't unreasonable noise. And the idea that, oh, well, it can all go to court and you can work it out there is not a reasonable solution, because if you don't go to court, you get a $445 citation. If you do go to court, you lose days of work. And many of the street performers on the street have regular jobs during the day. Michelle, who got a ticket, was a teacher. She lost at least one day or one afternoon of trying to doing her teaching work, which is important for her to pay her rent. So it's a real issue. Not just for the four of us, but for street performers up and down Pacific Avenue and for people throughout the city. And also it's an issue of candor with the police department. And we've been asking them for months to give us their standards. How loud is too loud? And if they just say, officer discretion, that doesn't tell you anything. If the officer said, okay, well, sing for me and I'll tell you how loud is too loud, then that might be something. We asked this officer to do that. She would not tell us. And so she then went and falsely reported to the guy who wrote us the ticket, they won't quiet down, you'll have to write them a ticket. If Judge Simons upholds this case, she's an even worse judge than I thought. But frankly, I don't think I ever lost any money betting on the integrity of the Santa Cruz judicial system.
That's about it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. I haven't been able to play any street interviews because I've had this this difficult guest in the studio telling me tall tales of officer abuse. And then, on top of everything else, some character's clown has come in who wants to play old music. Old music. Can you get that? I mean, not modern day street performer music, but old music, hippie day music. Oh, thank you so much. Well, that's going to be from the cream to the dregs. Uncle Dennis is going to be doing that, and you can join him for the next 3 hours, see if I care.
We're going to tax you with music.
He's
going to
tax us with music.
That's exciting.
Don't try it on the street, Uncle Dennis. Otherwise, we may have to talk to Officer Azu or possibly Officer Schoenfield, if you know what I mean.
Well, you know, Robert, it probably wasn't the volume at which you were singing. It had something to do with what you were singing.
Oh, now that would be content based, and that would I sputter to even think about that.
Yes, but you got to look at the reality of the situation. You've been oppressed.
Oh, come.
Just buck up and take it.
There you go. Be a man, in other words. Take your medicine, sit down, and shut up. And as for you, woman, try to show your proper role. What are those rags you're wearing? And when are you going to get some shoes, for God's sake?
I was told barefoot and pregnant.
I see. Well, we can work on that one after the show, with your permission, of course. In any case, I want to thank you for being in the studio with me, Cynthia.
Anytime.
And maybe on Sunday.
Yes, yeah. For sure. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, maybe we'll see you tomorrow. And I invite everybody to join us, if only to witness a travesty of justice in the Department 1 of Judge Ariadne Simons. And you can get a bagel and, chow down on that, and that'll be some consolation, perhaps. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30, probably a little earlier, to play Tom Noddy's Early Days in 1978. You'll get to hear the whole story, or the last half of the story, of the Scott Creek Bluff van dwellers. You want to reach me? You can, 423-4833. And now it's time for Uncle Dennis to do
it.
I do. I got something running. I'm about to run myself. Dennis is going to put on some questionable music, and I invite you to join him for his show, which is far more technically proficient, but it lacks the grit of the street. You know what I mean? We want Dennis to hit the streets one of these days, and perhaps he will. Talk to you again on Sunday.
Getting off to a good start tonight with Janis Joplin and the Big Brother and the Holding Company. That was an outtake from the recording sessions for Cheap Thrills. Hope you enjoyed that. A little thing called Roadblock. I'm Uncle Dennis. Want to welcome you to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 and www.freakradio tonight, Thursday night, as Robert and his riffraff clear out of the studio. Hopefully he'll stay out for a few days. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. And, hey, Robert, is this your mess?
That's for you, man.
I don't want it.
A little something. Come on. Will you...
If you're going to leave me something to eat, leave me something to eat.
Hey, listen, if it's good enough for my doggy.
Robert will be back Sunday morning around 9:30 if you can stand it. And I'll be here till about 11 if you can stand that. Playing rock and roll, blues, psychedelic, all that stuff from the 60s and 70s. The show's called From the Cream to the Dregs. And we got a lot of interesting stuff coming up tonight. We have something really unusual in about 25 minutes. We're going to open a can of beer. That hasn't been done on this show. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And then right around 11 o'clock, we'll break out some vinyl and have an entire hour of music by one artist or one group. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, www.freakradio.org. Donate if you can.
All right, we got a new song for you, old Elmore James song. Would you like to play it? This is an old true story. This is called I Must Have Did Somebody Wrong.
The bell has tolled, my baby called back, train and gone. The bell has tolled, my baby called back, train and gone. With all my fault, I must have did somebody wrong. Everything that happens, you know I am the blame. Everything that happens, you know I am the blame. I'm gonna find
Strange.